KCO, 1230 AM, W255DN, Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The Justice Department has fired prosecutor Maureen Comey, daughter of former FBI Director James Comey.
She was most recently with the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York and a prosecutor in the federal cases against Sean Diddy Combs and Jeffrey Epstein.
CBS's Matt Piper. President Trump today attacked supporters who've criticized his administration's decision to withhold Epstein's sex trafficking investigation files. Here's CBS's Scott McFarlane.
Trump's top surrogates in the Justice Department have kept a lower profile this week, including FBI Deputy Director Dan Bongino and Attorney General Pam Bondi, who declined to answer questions about the Epstein case.
Trump's been asking advisors if he should fire Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, but today he said it's highly unlikely he will. CBS's Nancy Cordes says Trump thinks Powell should lower interest rates.
Powell has said repeatedly that Trump's tariffs are likely to cause inflation and that lowering rates right now would actually make inflation worse.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks wrapping up summer league action. I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks playing the Chicago Bulls in their final summer league action in Las Vegas. The team confirming today that they have signed Cole Anthony, a free agent from the Orlando Magic. He plays guard, 6'2", started 22 games for Orlando, appearing in 67. Baseball. National League beating the All-Stars last night in a tiebreaker, 4-3. The Brewers head to L.A. to play the Dodgers Friday night. Manager Pat Murphy on the Thanasis and Tenacupo show asked, just how hard is it to hit a baseball in the major leagues?
Michael Jordan tried to play our game, you know what I mean? And he did good. He got the double A. That shows you how hard the game is. And he had a little bit of background, and it was so hard for him. But I believe if he stuck with it, he would get it. Because it's all about seeing that ball and being able to sequence your body and make good contact. And then you got eight defenders out there trying to catch it.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow human some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Crypto Week. This was supposed to be Crypto Week. This was supposed to be the coronation. The tech bros were supposed to all get warm and fuzzy in the panties. This was supposed to be the coming out of crypto. We were going to get crypto for everyone. And we were going to be able to create our own money. This was going to be great. Not so much. And I'm glad. Look, I'm glad the House shot it down. The Senate, very disappointed with a number of Democrats, talked about this last week. I think crypto's a scam. I don't think it's the future. I think it's the latest little shiny thing that's really going to, create another huge bubble for us. So good on the House for right now. In fact, Mike Johnson's losing his mind. But understand, crypto isn't about freedom. It's about new chains forged by tech bros and Wall Street venture capitalists. And they've just dressed it up in a digital, in a kind, gentle digital jargon. It's the future, they tell us. Crypto's the future. And it's money that no one can control. And if, understand, it's money that nobody's backing either. If you take a look at it, it really, as I said last week, it really does look a lot like the good old company script from the old company town days. And I hope that working people know what that means. I hope that our education system hasn't failed us. I hope when you hear company script, You think about our great-grandparents and our grandparents who worked their entire lives and never saw a U.S. dollar because everything they earned was either some token that the boss gave them to, or not real cash that you could only spend in the company store, where prices were set by the same people who controlled your job, your script, and your life. Also, where you got your health care, you got your food, you got everything from the company, and you paid for it in their currency. You were locked in. You were vulnerable to their manipulations and their greed. So no matter how hard you worked or how smart you tried to play it, you were still stuck in the company's throes. And crypto, for all its hype, is simply, in my view, building a modern version of that same trap. Instead of, you know, corporate bigwigs and Wall Street fat cats, it's now Silicon Valley. It's the inventors. It's the entrepreneurs. And they're inventing a new way for us to lose what little security we have. Because I've heard it. I've gotten the emails. People have said, you know, this is how you get rich. And you go, really? You think? When you consider that 1% of it is controlled, what the top 1% controls over 27% of all the Bitcoin, that the big hedge funds and the people who know what the game is, they control it. And it's being consolidated into fewer and fewer hands. And I know people said, but Rick, it's gone up. Yeah, because it went way down. And you look at this and it's the same gig as it's always been. Because when the market crashes, and we know that it will, who's going to be left holding the bag? Is it going to be our big investor class folks, the well-connected? Or is it going to be average, everyday working people who are just trying to squirrel a little bit away, hoping to get that big fish? This was going to be my pension. I'm going to move away from the lottery pension system to the crypto pension, which, well, you're never going to get. The sad reality, it's going to be everyday workers and savers who are going to lose their life savings because someone on Reddit promised, this one's going to the moon, while they've already cashed out. And now you've got Congress, Crypto Week, twisting itself into knots, debating how much of our financial future they're going to hand over to some shadowy currencies with no real oversight. And I've had people say, no, Rick, that's what this Genius Act is. It's real oversight. I'm not buying. And fortunately, 63% of Americans don't trust crypto to be safe or reliable. Because that, I got to tell you, good reason. But thank goodness, at least 63% of the country, not stupid. I mean, if you look at the wild swings and the outright scams, the companies that vanish overnight and have taken your money, my money, our hard-earned savings with them, sounds eerily like the old days, the promises of company script. Trust us, it's just as good as cash. Until you try to put food on the table or keep a roof over your head. And then, well, you know, I'm sorry. Nothing here. Nothing to see here. And now we find out that the Trump administration is going to allow pension funds and 401ks to dabble. And you go, the fact that our retirement security could be gambled away in a market so volatile that basically it's a digital casino, that should terrify everyone who's worked a lifetime just for the opportunity that maybe they're going to be able to spend their golden age, their golden years, their old age with some bit of security, some bit of dignity. And the unfortunate reality is history has shown us time and time again, when the financial house of cards finally collapses, and it usually does, it's not the suits in the C-suites. It's not them. It's not the wealthy who lose their homes. It's not their kids who ever go hungry. It's us. It's you. It's me. It's the working class. It's the backbone of this country that every time is left to bail them out. And while we're bailing them out, we're having to fend for ourselves. So no, I'm sorry. Crypto, no, it isn't the revolution for the working man or woman. For me, it's just the latest scheme by the powerful to invent a new way to bleed us dry. This time, I'm just going to dress it up in cute buzzwords and sell us the same old company script, just in a digital wrapper. Things don't seem to ever change. And then you couple that with the fact that this administration, thanks to the court system, has gone and revoked the Biden-era debt forgiveness for healthcare debt. Understand, the idea of forgiving medical debt was a big freaking deal for a lot of families. I'm going through a little bit of it myself. Fortunately, I'm not going to go into the kind of debt that I've talked to other people who are in a similar situation than I was. But it's still dangerous. You know, we're the only country in the industrialized world that if you get sick, you go broke. Now, the court decision struck down the rule that would have given $49 billion. Would have wiped away $49 billion in medical debt. I mean, we've already paid for it. And would have cleared the credit ratings of 15 million Americans. Understand, this wasn't about helping families. This wasn't about ensuring that workers get a shot. This was about ensuring that the wealth class gets more. And we should be mad about this, because understand, medical debt is everywhere. About 43% of employees with employer-provided health insurance, they've got medical debt. It's not just the uninsured. It's just not people who had, you know, bad policies. It's every working person in this country who's susceptible to this. And what's frustrating is I'm still being told that this administration cares about workers. The more things change, what's that saying? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Where the working people of this country do all the work, take all the risk, break their back, and well, our wealth class, they get to reap all the rewards. Should be quite infuriating to every working person. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break with Jordan Barab, former OSHA official, for the latest on what Trump's up to. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, you knew the Trump Department of Labor was going to be business friendly. You knew deregulation was there, privatization's coming, massive handouts, tax breaks, all of that stuff, and, well, unsafe working conditions. And as I understand, there was a mine disaster in Illinois on Monday. My first thought was, I wonder if there's an MSHA inspector going to show up to the Nighthawk mine. Don't know what happened yet, But I got a question when you see the kind of cuts that are coming. And my next guest has written an interesting piece on OSHA penalties. He asked the question, how low can you go? And non-existent would be my first thought. But here to share some thoughts on his most recent piece and maybe where things are going with safety on the job, I've asked my good friend Jordan Barab to come share some thoughts. Jordan's a former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor for OSHA during the Obama years. He also does the definitive website on workplace safety and accidents. You can find that at jordanbarab.com/confined space. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Happy to be here, Rick.
So, you know, I got to wonder, let's start right there. The Nighthawk mine disaster that just happened, the mine collapse. My first thought was, does MSHA show up? Is there an office somewhere nearby? Is there anything that could have been done all because of the defunding and the things that we've been talking about the last several months?
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see. I don't, so far they haven't closed down any MSHA offices. So far, they haven't laid off many people at MSHA. So one assumes that somebody will show up. But the problem with these budget cuts and the problem with the general ideology of this administration is that you're going to have employers who are going to, you know, have more of a tendency to cut corners. I mean, ideally, what OSHA and MSHA want to do is have enough presence to prevent these incidents from happening in the first place. You know, they'll probably always have enough people to show up after something happens. But the question is, you know, will they have enough people there and enough, you know, deterrent value in terms of penalties and inspectors to keep these type of, you know, deadly incidents from happening before they happen?
Now, you know, one of the things that you know, you've written about is the fact that OSHA is am I getting this right? They're reducing the penalties on small employers.
OSHA is required by law to consider the size of employers when it's issuing citations. And previously, you know, for very small employers under 10 employees, OSHA, you know, had the potential of providing a 70% reduction in the penalty. And then for employers between 11 and 25, a 60% reduction. Well, what they've done on that is they've grouped them both together. And now they all get the 70% reduction. You know, instead of just 1 to 10, it's now 1 to 25 employees. So they've expanded, you know, the number of, you know, quote unquote small employers that get the largest reduction.
So if I can put this into terms that maybe even I understand, we have limited inspectors, which, you know, for me, if you had no cops on the highway, I would probably speed more than I do. And if the fines were pathetically low, 70% less than all, even if there were, you know, cops on the beat, would it matter? It just seems like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah,
the way it's been laid out.
I mean, the deterrence. I mean, this is what, you know, ideally these agencies want to do is they want to deter employers from cutting corners. And there are two factors in terms of deterrence. One is the likelihood that you're going to get caught, ideally, you know, before something happens, and the impact of getting caught. Well, they're reducing both of those. They're reducing the number of inspections. You know, Trump is proposing to reduce the number of inspections they're going to conduct next year by 30%. And now they're, you know, reducing, you know, their penalties, not just for small employers, but in a number of other ways, they're also going to reduce penalties.
So, you know, but here's where I struggle with this, because a lot of small employers, they're never inspected. I mean, when you look at the number of inspectors we have, what's the number for OSHA to inspect every workplace?
Right now, if OSHA were to inspect every workplace in the country just once, it would take 186 years.
So the chances getting inspected are pretty low.
Exactly.
So it seems to me that by having higher fines, you know, maybe that's something of a deterrent, especially for smaller businesses who might be more apt to cut corners. Or am I off base?
Yeah, no. I mean, the more you have a realistic chance of an OSHA inspector showing up at your door, and the more chance you have of actually getting hit by a fairly substantial penalty, the more likelihood there is that you're going to actually make sure your workplace is safe, and you're not going to be at risk of any kind of these you know, high penalties if an OSHA inspector shows up. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that the whole point of, I mean, any enforcement agency is to have some presence there and to have some impact. You know, if the employers are breaking the law.
Because my concern is, look, the pendulum has already swung way to the side of capital and to corporate America and even small businesses to an extent. And look, I don't want regulations that are so burdensome that nobody can do it. But also, I don't want the incentive to be, hey, there's no one going to come and inspect. And when they do, the fines are going to be minimal. So it's in our best interest to break the law, much like what happens with the NLRB. It's almost legal malpractice for lawyers not to tell employers to fire people because the penalties are so pathetically low and non-existent and the payoff is so great. It just seems that we've incentivized bad behavior over the right stuff.
Yeah. And let me say something about, you know, we've been talking about small employers. And let me say a couple of things about that. First of all, workers should not have a higher chance of getting hurt or dying in a workplace depending on its size. I mean, the employees of small employers can get killed just as easily as the employees of large employers. So there's no difference there and no advantage that small employers should have. But, you know, it's true. You know, small employers don't have the resources necessarily, you know, to hire a full-time safety and health person or to hire a consultant. But, you know, OSHA takes that into account. OSHA has this 100 and I think it's a, yeah, it's a huge program that provides on-site consultation. You know, in other words, free on-site consultation. So any small or medium-sized employer can essentially get a free inspection from OSHA or the OSHA consultation people without any risk of a citation. So, you know, they have this, you know, they have the ability to make their workplaces safe, even if they're the smallest employer.
So let me step back on this because now my mind is going into these places. What you're telling me is that if I'm an employer and I go, hey, I'm not sure if my workplace is safe or not, come in and tell me what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong, and there's no penalty associated with that, no possibility of penalty associated.
Exactly. It's called the on-site consultation program. You can essentially get a free inspection from the consultation people. They'll tell you exactly what's wrong in your workplace, what you need to do in improvement. No, to improve it, no penalty, nothing. And you can do that. And then if you do that, you know, and they have the opportunity to get those free consultations, and OSHA shows up, and you've done what the consultant told you to do, you got no problem. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, small businesses are out there, you know, OSHA's driving them out of business with these terrible penalties and, you know, they can't afford to, you know, to make their workplaces safe. They can afford, you know, to figure out what they need to do to make their workplaces safe. So, you know, they already have the potential, the smallest ones for a 70% or even the slightly larger ones, a 60% reduction, you know, so it's not like OSHA's ignoring or exploiting small employers. You know, they are bending over backwards to make sure that small employers, you know, have the resources they need to make their workplaces safe.
Because ultimately, that's the mission, right? That's the point, right? That's the mission of the organization, right?
Yeah. I mean, OSHA doesn't want, you know, I mean, OSHA's mission is not to just cite employers. OSHA's mission is to make the workplaces safe.
Now, here's where my other thought goes. With the conservative mindset, OSHA should be paying for itself. They should be a pay-as-you-go kind of get out there and gin up some fines to keep operating kind of operation. Mm-hmm. If you know, the privatization model were to come to OSHA.
Yeah. Some people think, you know, OSHA gets to keep the fines. You know, OSHA doesn't get to keep its fines. They all go into the general treasury. OSHA's budget is OSHA's budget.
Oh, so you don't, you know, not like the rumor about state troopers who have a quota at the end of the month.
Exactly.
You didn't get your cut. But here's the other thing, though. You know, me as a union guy, I don't want OSHA around. I don't think we should. I don't need them. What I say is we should be organizing in the workplace. And at the moment you see something unsafe, you say, no, that's unsafe. And I think of myself. I've been very fortunate over the years to work in a unionized environment. Whenever there's been a truck that the brakes are out of adjustment or lights are missing or anything is unsafe on that, I simply say, fix it. I'm not taking it. And I have a union that backs me up. I want that for every worker. OSHA is great, but I want that first.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you've got a good good union, good contract language, you don't really need OSHA, quite frankly.
So let me ask you the other side of this, because, you know, clearly the Trump administration is moving in this direction under DeRemer's leadership at Labor. What do you think Democrats should be doing with this being part of what's going on in our country? Is there legislative action you see that Democrats should be pushing for to strengthen OSHA? Because,
well, yeah, there's there you know, the Democrats put a bill into the hopper every year that would modernize OSHA and improve, you know, OSHA's effectiveness. It hasn't gone anywhere because there's just not enough support, especially, you know, obviously among Republicans. And yeah, this year, you know, with the Republicans, having control of both the House and the Senate, there's not much chance of any legislation going anywhere. You know, what we're worried about now is significant budget cuts, you know, from Trump's budget. And for that, you know, Democrats really need to get out there and show how many, you know, workers are getting hurt in the workplace, how they're getting killed in the workplace, and how OSHA, which has started off as a very small agency, is getting made smaller and smaller, by the Trump administration. And this can only lead to one thing, which is more workers getting injured, ill, and killed in the workplace.
Now, you said the budget hasn't really gone into cutting yet. What are the proposed cuts? Do we know?
Well, yeah, we do. We have, I'll take a look at them, but there's significant cuts, first of all, in enforcement, and that's probably the most critical part. The OSHA budget itself is going to be down about 8%. Enforcement, they're cutting the enforcement budget by 10%, but they're cutting the number of inspections that OSHA is able to make by about 30%. They're also cutting about a quarter of OSHA standards budget, you know, the department that issues and works on and issues standards, and they're trying to eliminate the Susan Harwood Worker Training Grant Program, which is the only program OSHA has that gives grants to nonprofits. You know, it gives it to unions and COSH groups and things like that, but it also gives a lot of grants to business associations and universities in order to train workers. And they're trying to eliminate that entire program, which is only, you know, it's only about $12 million. It's nothing. But yeah, they want to do anything they can to make sure that workers, you know, don't get the training they need and don't get any of the benefits that they are supposedly have by law to work in a safe workplace.
But Jordan, you know, we got to get rid of that waste, fraud, and abuse.
Yeah, well, OSHA got rid of whatever waste they had, you know, decades ago. I mean, this is a bare bones agency, always has been, and is getting more bare bones all the time. We believe me, when I was there, we looked for any kind of waste that we could get rid of. There really isn't much left there except for the bones.
So the question the question that I come back with on this then is, how is this good for working people? How is this good for me as a worker? How is this good for construction workers, farm workers? How is this good for any of the folks who show up every day, punch a clock, and never seem to make enough at the end of the week, but at least get to go home?
Yeah, exactly. It's not. I mean, again, it's going to be, you know, it's just going to be more deaths and more injuries and preventable deaths and preventable injuries. And let me just say, I mean, they're doing, you know, I mean, the small business part has gotten, you know, the most attention from these penalty reductions, but they're doing other things too. You mean, OSHA is also required to take the company's history into account, right? So that what that has always meant is that if a company has had an inspection, but no citations over the last 5 years, then OSHA will, you know, consider a, you know, like a 15% discount, a reduction in their penalty. Now, what they've done now is instead of saying, you know, if you were inspected in the last 5 years and didn't have any citations, you know, we're going to give you this reduction. Instead, they're saying, if you've never been inspected, then you get this reduction, which is ridiculous because they're making OSHA so small that almost nobody's ever going to get inspected anymore. So everybody will essentially be, you know, get this history reduction, you know, for supposedly good behavior when they've never even been inspected before.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this seems like one of those issues that if you work for a living, this is something you should care about. And I think something that Democrats and Republicans who care about working people should be caring about and strengthening. Again, this is another one of those moments where if you're someone who doesn't believe in government, who doesn't believe government can or should do anything, you support these moves. But if you're someone like me who believes that, you know what, I want to go home at the end of the day and I want a government that's going to ensure that at least I have some measure of safety in the workplace, you've got to be angry about what's going on.
Yeah, and you have a law that says they have to do that. I mean, you know, I wrote in my piece, and you know, you have it there, but the ridiculous press release that they put out that this is from, you know, Keith Sunderling, who's the deputy secretary of OSHA, the number two guy at OSHA. I mean, I'm sorry, the deputy secretary of Department of Labor, the number two person at the Department of Labor. He says he justifies this by saying all employers should be afforded the opportunity to comply with regulations to help maintain a safe work environment. Well, employers already have that opportunity. And it's not a matter of having the opportunity to comply with regulations. It's the law, right? This is a 54-year-old law that says employers must comply, not that they should have the opportunity to comply.
And it's, as you pointed out earlier, you know,
Huh?
As you pointed out earlier, it's free.
Yeah, yeah. And then it says, by lowering penalties on small employers, we are supporting the entrepreneurs that drive our economy by giving them the tools to keep our workers safe and healthy. Well, we're already giving them the tools to keep workers safe and healthy. You know, this doesn't give them any more tools. It doesn't force them to use the reductions they're getting because they're small employers, you know, to invest that into safety. They're not giving them any more tools. It's just total BS. And it's just another, you know, sop they're throwing to the business community to show, you know, how business friendly they are.
But not a surprise from this administration.
No, but the problem is it's costing lives. This is not just a paperwork thing. This is going to cost lives.
And that's the sad part of it. Jordan, I appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much for the work you do. I hope folks will check out the website, jordanbarab.com/confined space. We'll get links out on social media. Jordan, thanks so much.
Okay. Happy to be here, Rick. Thanks.
I want to hear your thoughts. Something here make you angry, upset, ready to act? I don't know. Maybe call your congressman. I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Showers and thunderstorms around this evening, mostly cloudy overnight. Cooler lows in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, early clouds, then some sunshine for the afternoon. A refreshing day with highs in the mid-70s. Dry Friday, then some rain Friday night and Saturday. Currently 57 degrees.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The Big Beautiful Bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes
right.
In the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's been interesting the last couple days watching the about face that Trump has made on Ukraine. And, you know, does he feel humiliated by Putin that he got taken? Although, you know, he did, as quoted by CNN, he did say, you know, that Putin fooled a lot of people. He fooled Clinton, fooled Bush, Obama, Biden, but he didn't fool me. And you go, really? That's kind of an interesting rewrite of history. At least the one that all of us remember, not the one that's been rewritten by the right wing. And I got to even wonder if they're going to buy it. Because one of the things that my red hats always said is, he kept us out of war. Now he's talking about bombing Moscow. Here to share some thoughts on, well, what's going on and maybe what this means. I've asked my good friend Rich Ojeda to come share some thoughts, a 24-year Army veteran, currently a congressional candidate in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District. And also, you can see him on his Ojeda Live hit every weeknight at 8:30 p.m. on Facebook and on YouTube. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure being on your show, Rick.
So what do you make of this? Let's start with bombing Moscow. Evidently, Trump asked Zelensky if Ukraine could hit Moscow. What do we think of that?
I don't trust Donald Trump, and I don't trust Putin. And in the beginning, we saw that Donald Trump, when he became the president for the second time, you know, he did everything in his power to make sure that Vladimir Putin got away with anything and everything. He never showed any courage to try to stand up against Putin. And, you know, I think Vladimir Putin is starting to realize that Donald Trump is a buffoon and that Putin is starting to let people in his actions pretty much know that he's not the one, that Donald Trump's not in charge.
Yeah, there was an interesting story over at USA Today where you had a senior security official there saying that Russia doesn't care what Trump's theatrical ultimatums are when talking about slapping sanctions, secondary sanctions on buyers of Russian exports, which kind of plays right into what you're saying. You know, they know his word doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. And I'm going to tell you, I still believe, because, you know, nobody has ever seen such a quick turnaround. where, you know, here we are, we're doing everything in our power to help the sovereign nation of Ukraine that was attacked by Putin. It was attacked. And they've been fighting for their lives ever since. And then all of a sudden, Donald Trump comes in and cuts everything off. And that absolutely hurt Ukraine significantly. And it's great that Europe has rallied around Ukraine, because that's what right looks like. But, you know, I kind of see how Donald Trump wants to try to act like he's in charge of things. And I think that Vladimir Putin is starting to realize that Donald Trump is a buffoon. Yeah. And you know what? We're not going to let Donald Trump act like he's got the power of anything. And I think Putin has pushed him back far enough where it's got Donald Trump a little shook. And that's maybe why he's talking about supporting Ukraine. I personally do not trust Donald Trump. And if I was Ukraine, I would not trust Donald Trump, because nothing would surprise me if Donald Trump isn't trying to act like this so that he could do something to help his good old buddy Putin out. I put nothing past these folks.
No, I mean, if you're Ukraine, you take what he's offering, which are, you know, offensive missiles. For, he said only defensive ones. Am I getting this wrong?
No, I thought that it was defensive weapons. But I mean, at the end of the day, okay, so what changed? You know, since the day one, you cut everything off.
Right.
You cut everything off. And now all of a sudden you're wanting to get in there and help Ukraine?
Yeah, but if you're talking about striking Moscow, that's offensive.
Yeah. If he gives them the equipment that can strike Moscow. And oh, by the way, they have the ability to strike Moscow. If they really want to, they could probably do that. But once again, you know, I mean, you know, would Donald Trump completely do this 180? I mean, where did this come from? What made him all of a sudden go from pro-Putin to now bombing, you know, helping Ukraine bomb Moscow? Something is up. I don't trust none of these people. I think they may be trying to do something to kind of lure, where they think they're going to lure Zelensky into some way they're going to be able to do something negative against Ukraine.
But I don't
trust them.
Rich, quite frankly, the story of the last couple of days that, interestingly enough, has not gone away. This Epstein thing, it ain't going away. So you could conceivably make the argument that this is a wag the dog scenario. We'll escalate the war. We'll get into this. We'll get people talking about anything but those files.
You are absolutely spot on, because at the end of the day, you know, I really still believe that the reason why they invaded California, because they were not, you know, those were peaceful protests. You know, Governor Newsom had no problem with that, but they did that. And I think that they did that to try to take everybody's eyes off of the Epstein files and off of the fact that they did a recount up in Rockland, New York, where now I guess they show that the machines were manipulated or something, and Kamala Harris got not one single vote. So there's a lot of things that are going on over here that I would absolutely never put it past Donald Trump to try to set a fire over here. And, you know, Donald Trump this is not going away. And this Epstein stuff is absolutely quite damning. You know, we've got over 1,000 children that were preyed on by 150 some multi-millionaires and billionaires. Remember, there's only 814 billionaires in the United States of America. So what that means is a significant chunk of those people probably participated in this. And let me say this. If the Democrats are on the Epstein files, we don't care. Let me tell you something. Everybody wants to scream, Bill Clinton. If Bill Clinton is on the Epstein files and there's footage and videos and anything that shows that he preyed on young kids, put his butt in alligator Alcatraz too. But you know what? Everybody, and that's why Donald Trump is scared to death. It wouldn't put it past, you know, he probably talked this over with Putin. Hey, Vlad, I'm in trouble here. It's getting rough. I need to try to figure out a way. Don't worry. Don't launch any missiles. I'm going to act like I'm standing up to you, but really I'm trying to take everybody's eyes off of what's really important, and that is the Epstein files.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for years, you know, as the right, as the Bonginos of the world and the Patels and all those people were screaming about these files, I kept saying, if there are files, if there is information, Donald Trump is eyeballs deep in it. There are videos of them mucking it up. And, you know, now we've got this. Which, you know, my red hats aren't the people that I talk to, not thrilled. So the question that I come back to, and for folks like you who are running for Congress in 2026, How are you going to use this to attract maybe some of those red hats that were on the fringe? People were just saying, I didn't like Kamala, but, you know, wasn't thrilled about him. Who kept saying, you know, he wasn't in the, he's not part of the deep state. He wasn't in these scandals. He's not a politician, and he's not for war. How do you use this?
Well, you know, it's kind of like my current race when I'm running against Richard Hudson. You know, he's the one that told everybody no more town halls. Now, when I go to places, I've even had Republicans come up to me and say, hey, man, we like what you're saying. We're going to support you. Independents supporting me. You know, I want to be the person that says, if you open your eyes and you start to realize that you've been played, welcome back to reality. Come on back over to the side that deals with, you know, the honesty side of it. But once again, there's still going to be a lot of people that are going to be very hesitant. Fox News is not going to try to help educate people because, once again, their base is MAGA. So, you know, I don't understand what they're going to try to get away with. But at the end of the day, this is absolutely quite damning. And for anybody to say that the files don't even exist, Pam Bondi is she should be removed from her position. You know, she literally said, I got the files on my desk. And let me tell you something. There are things out there. You know, I've already heard about photographs of Donald Trump standing by a pool with a bunch of young girls that are topless. Look, if I see a photograph of Donald Trump standing in a pool, by a pool, with about 10 or 15 young girls that are topless, that right there is enough to arrest him. Arrest. These are children. These are children that were preyed upon. And let me tell you something. They ran on this horrible cabal of Democrat pedophiles. Well, I'll tell you right now, if you look at how many people get caught preying on children on the Republican side versus the Democrat side, I challenge anybody to let's look at that for the last year and let's see how many is what. I'm going to tell you right now, you got a lot of youth pastors out there getting in a lot of trouble, and it's happening. But once again, a lot of these MAGA folks are doing the same thing. Yeah. All I'm saying is you need to start waking up. You need to turn the channel off of Fox News, and this needs to matter. No matter what Donald Trump says, this right here needs to matter. If the Epstein files are no longer, it's because they got rid of the Epstein files. And they promised America that we were going to get justice for these 1,000-plus little girls that got preyed on at Epstein Island, at Mar-a-Lago, and at their properties in Florida and at their properties in New York. And you know what? I don't care. If we can give $3.2 trillion to the billionaire class, they can start paying for the crimes that they commit.
There you go.
And they can start making sure that those young women that have had to be quiet their entire adult lives will finally be able to see justice for the crimes that was committed against them.
Yeah, I give you credit for giving credit to the Q kooks and the MAGA folks who you believe want justice for those victims. I see it a bit different. They just wanted Bill Clinton's head on a platter. They wanted the elites to finally pay something, and they're angry that's not going to happen.
Racism is really, really thick in that aspect. That's just the way that it is. I don't care who you are. You know, look at what Donald Trump is doing. He ran and he had Latinos, he had Hispanics, he had Cubans, he had Nicaraguans, Hondurans, and since he has become the president in these 7 months, he has removed all of their protections. You know, this is pure racism. You know, they're snatching people off the street and shoving them in cages. And it's unacceptable. 32 bodies to a cage. You know, it's the heat is unbearable. People are sweating through their clothes. You know, it floods constantly. Christy Noem posts a picture of a dorm. Like it's like a guy has his own bed and he's got his own locker and he's got his own space. That's not true. You know, this is absolute pure racism is what we are seeing right here. And that is unacceptable. The racism is unacceptable. The protection of the pedophiles are unacceptable. And that's what we're seeing here right now. That's what they're doing. What they're doing is stalling. They're trying to keep these files from coming out. That's protecting the predator instead of taking up for the daggone the child that was abused.
What do you think of Pam Bondi's handling of all this? Now, you know, you got Trump who just came out and said that Bondi should release whatever she thinks is credible. And that's a nice caveat. It's not release what you've got. It's what you think is credible.
Release all of the files. You know, release everything. Pam Bondi is absolute trash. The only reason why she got that job is because she is willing to do anything, legal or illegal, to make sure that she's in Donald Trump's good graces. That's how all of these people are. That's how Hegseth is. I mean, look at what they're doing. They're getting rid of people of color in leadership positions. They're getting rid of women. They're getting rid of anybody that's trans, LGBTQ. I mean, look at what they're doing. They got rid of the naming of most of our military bases that were going to Congressional Medal of Honor recipients and brought them all back to the daggone Jim Crow era statues and or leaders. It's absolute garbage. That's what we're seeing. These people are going to do everything in their power to protect their Donald Trump.
Yeah, but, you know, this Rich, that Trump ran on that. MAGA voted for it. That's what they wanted. That's who they are. I'm looking at this stuff going, you know, all of the stuff that we're hearing now from the MAGA types going, well, I didn't vote for this. Yeah, you did. It was all written down. Every bit of it was written down.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But right now, you know, look, any of these MAGAs out there that are willing to say, okay, I'm done. Look, I'm just wanting to see people come back to sanity.
Some bit of sanity,
because you look at this, you know, MAGA is 20% of the vote. MAGA is 20% of the vote. And you know what? I really wish these people would wake up, because you know what? I know a lot of these people. I got a lot of family members that are those people that I really wish they would wake up and realize that it was all a farce. Donald Trump ran on promises that they never, ever had any plan to ever follow through with. And once again, that should matter. Yeah. You know, when you run and you promise things and then you win and you completely go against everything that you promised, you know, there should be a way for us to be able to say, stop. And we want to rescind our votes and remove that person from office. You know, a person that gets in office should actually have like steps of accomplishments that they need to follow through with. And it should be that way, you know?
Yeah, but I'm looking at this Epstein thing, and there's a lot now that really, if the right decides to pick up on it with their conspiracy theories, evidently there's 3 minutes of video that's missing from what the FBI described as the full raw surveillance video the night before Epstein was killed. There's some time missing there. Do we see another Nixon kind of moment?
Well, I will tell you that I guarantee you that if we were to place people that we could trust as investigators into these things, we would probably see a lot of people get in trouble. A lot of people getting in trouble. You know, everybody knows, you know, Epstein didn't, you know, kill himself. And once again, there's a minute or a couple minutes that are missing. It doesn't take long. If you have the people, it doesn't take long to take somebody's life. You know, it doesn't take long. You got a couple people that run in there real quick, grab him and do what they do. Within less than a minute, you can leave him basically lifeless in the floor.
So you're on team Hillary. Are you on team Hillary did it or team Trump did it?
I'm on team Trump did it. And I really don't care. I mean, in terms of Hillary,
team billionaire did it. That
let me tell you something. If they had anything on Hillary Clinton, they would have crushed her a long time ago. Yeah. She had the guts to stand in front of Congress for 11 hours. The members of Congress right now are absolute trash. They literally voted to block allowing a friggin' floor vote on the Epstein to release the Epstein files. You know, and at the end of the day, isn't this what we need? We need to see every single member of Congress that is either willing to say, yay, let's release the files, or nay, let's protect the guilty. And the Republicans voted that bill down. Yeah. And that is an absolute shame. It's a slap in the face. You know, Steve Bannon says we're going to lose 40 Republican seats in the House if we don't release the files. Well, you know what? Guess what? What's happening right now is you just saw every Republican refusing to do what is right. Now, what they're going to say is they're going to say, well, we never vote on anything that comes to the floor without going through committees. Hey, go to committees. Go to committees and subpoena people. Subpoena people there. Subpoena some of them billionaires and show the pictures. Show the videos. Let's see what happens in. But they won't because they know that this is bad for them. They know that they're going to lose a lot because of this, but they also know that if they can keep it quiet, they still won't lose everything, because there will be some people that they will still be able to keep, but they won't lose everything and everybody. But if this actually comes out, All we got to see is one photograph, a Donald Trump standing by a pool with a bunch of topless children, and he is done. Yeah. And it's time to put him in handcuffs. And if the military has to do that, fine. If Katz Patel and Dan Bongino don't have the guts to go put handcuffs on him, make no mistake about it. I'm sure we have a general officer that will have no problem doing something like
that. No, for me, the Howard Stern comments, the comments he made on Howard Stern, the first one being if his daughter wasn't his daughter, he'd be dating her. Which, yep, creepy as all you know what. And the other comment that while he was the head of the, while he owned the Miss Teen universe, yeah, pageant, he would check on the, he went to inspect the contestants.
And he laughed. He made fun saying, and I got to go in there and I got to see everybody naked while they were changing. And I got away with it because I owned the company, you know. And once again, Miss Teen USA. You got 16, 17-year-old girls, and of course, a couple 18 and 19s probably. But at the end of the day, if you are a father and your child was a teen pageant member and you found out that he walked into the room when she was naked and stayed there and looked at her, unacceptable, unacceptable. But once again, Donald Trump will tell you exactly who he is behind closed doors when he thinks no one is listening. We're just fortunate that there's been enough people out there that caught him.
Yeah. No, I'm hoping the right does what they do on the conspiracy theory and go right after this Epstein's thing, so that it gets exposed. But Rich, yep, as always, great talking with you. I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work and keep up on the campaign trail.
Hey, I sure will, man, and I'll keep you informed there, Rick.
I appreciate it. Our good friend Rich Ojeda. Make sure you check out his website, Ojeda4NC.com. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at that. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1862. That was the day that black rights activist Ida B. Wells Barnett was born in Holly Springs, Mississippi. She was the oldest of eight children. Wells went to college and then became a teacher in Memphis, Tennessee. While in Memphis, Ida B. Wells became active in speaking out against black oppression in the Jim Crow South. She was the editor of a black newspaper, the Free Speech and Headlight. She wrote about many of the issues that faced the black community, including violence, unequal education facilities, and voter suppression. Taking such a public stand could have disastrous repercussions. She wrote under the pseudonym Iola, but she was fired from her job for writing about the inequities of the segregated Southern education system. Tom Moss, a successful black store owner and friend of Ida B. Wells, was lynched by a white mob. Two other black men were also lynched for helping him to try and defend his store. Black Southern business owners were seen as potential economic competition and were often the targets of threats, violence, and lynching. Angered by the murders, Ida B. Wells began to research the lynchings. She published the findings of her investigation in her newspaper. Furious white residents destroyed and burned her newspaper office. In danger for her life, Wells left Memphis. Ida moved to Chicago, where she continued her anti-lynching work, documenting how the heinous act happened not only in the South. She helped to found the NAACP. At the first NAACP conference in Atlanta in 1909, Wells spoke, saying, quote, "Time was when lynching appeared to be sectional, but now it is national. A blight upon our nation, mocking our laws, and disgracing our Christianity." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, on this day in labor history, 1894, we had a tragic chapter in our history unfold in the southern bituminous coal fields of Alabama. The struggle of coal miners back then, you know, race was a big thing, black and white. But this, the wage cuts, the exploitative owners, all of that reached a violent climax when you had the striking miners killed several black replacement workers. Now, you know, this event is not just a story of a labor struggle, of a strike, but it really is a stark lesson about the intersection of race and class in our labor history. You go back to the panic of 1893. It devastated the coal industry for working people, and it led to massive wage cuts up to 30% for miners who were already living really paycheck to paycheck, hand to mouth. It wasn't paycheck, company script to company script. Because employers could do that, because where else are you going to go? And two, it's the money that they gave you. There's no government agency to go complain to. So what happened is the workers organized. The United Mine Workers called for a nationwide strike. And even though Alabama miners weren't officially part of the union, they sought it in their interest to walk out in solidarity. Both black and white miners joined the picket lines. And for the briefest of brief moments, they held. The hardship was shared. There was unity across racial lines, which did not make owners happy. And look, this was a rare and extremely powerful act in the Jim Crow South. And what did the owners do? Well, they did what they always do. It's about divide and conquer. They were quick to exploit the racial division. And for why? To line their own pockets, of course. So what'd they do? They went out to Kansas, got themselves some strikebreakers, got some scabs who happened to be black. Because, hey, you freed slaves. We're gonna create a colored man's colony. You're going to have riches beyond your wild imagination. We're going to build you all this stuff. It's going to be great. Understand, they were just being used as pawns to break the strike and keep wages low, not just for the workers on the picket line, but for the replacement workers, for the scabs too. And this is one of those things, again, if you're thinking about scabbing, don't, because you're just a useful idiot in a game to make wages, hours, conditions worse. But bringing in these replacement workers, these scabs, stoked racial tensions because they were black. They did that on purpose. Classic divide and conquer. And, well, the idea of solidarity was broken, and you had the tragedy on this day in 1894 where violence erupted at the Pratt Mine, and, you know, the striking miners ambushed the replacement workers. The scabs got attacked by black miners too. Resulted in the deaths of two black scabs. And understand, this violence wasn't just a product of racial hatred. It was a product of desperation and manipulation by those in power. As you already know, the nationwide strike failed. The miners, black and white, returned to work. Their unity shattered, and their demands, well, most certainly not met, and in most cases, actually got worse. And you think back to, you know, why are you talking about this now, Rick? Well, it's a painful reminder of the fact that employers still use the kind of divide and conquer, the kind of Jay Gould, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. Be it racial lines, gender, immigration lines, anything they can do to weaken collective action and suppress wages. So the story of 1894 Alabama miners is a warning and a lesson. For real progress for working people, it depends on solidarity. It depends on the idea that standing together, united, you can fight for better wages, hours, conditions. And it transcends the false boundaries set by those who are in power. Look, only recognizing that we have shared interest can we hope to build a future where there's dignity and justice, not just for the handful at the top, but for all of us. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, I want to hear it. You miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio. WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Stupid. That's what President Trump called some of his supporters today who are relentlessly pushing him to order the Justice Department to release all of its files on Jeffrey Epstein.
It's all been a big hoax. It's perpetrated by the Democrats, and some stupid Republicans and foolish Republicans fall into the net.
The Justice Department has fired Maureen Comey, who was involved in prosecuting the Epstein case, former federal prosecutor Lori Levinson.
By firing her, that actually might rile up more questions about what she did and what they found during that case.
Maureen Comey was also one of the prosecutors in the Sean Diddy Combs case. President Trump fired her father, James Comey, who was the director of the FBI during Trump's first term. President Trump has been going back and forth on whether to fire Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. Today he said it's, quote, highly unlikely he'll do so. CBS's Nancy Cordes said,